hundreds of millions, give or take, would like to clamber into the sanctuary of Lifeboat USA. Given the condition of the waters in which they tread, who can blame them? Still, we wonder, can we allow everyone into Lifeboat USA?
Welcome to the award-winning Food Chain Show with your host, Michael Olson. Now, get ready for an hour of What's Eating What Radio.
Well, hello out there. You are tuned into the 1090th edition of the Food Chain right here on the GCN Radio Network. Or hey, perhaps you're among our friends up there in Aberdeen who are tuned in as we stream along in the Food Chain page at metrofarm.com. Well, whoever you are and wherever you are, welcome aboard. I am Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What Radio, with engineer Jason Strubia on the boards. Hello, Jason.
Pleasure to be with.
Thank you very much for being there, flying the plane today. Also, intern producer Olivia Duncan is here with us. Olivia, I have a question for you.
What's that?
Is it illegal immigrant or undocumented immigrant?
I strongly believe it's undocumented. I don't think it's such a matter of geopolitics as it is about human decency.
Okay, there you go. Well, folks, today we are going to play along with the late ecologist Garrett Hardin's lifeboat ethics. So pull on your life jacket and get ready to get wet. Our ship is sunk, but fortunately we have succeeded in clambering into a lifeboat. There are 50 of us in this lifeboat and room for another 10. But our lifeboat is surrounded by hundreds of people treading water and crying out for help. And so now we are faced with some life and death ethical dilemmas. First of all, do we allow everyone to clamber into the sanctuary of our lifeboat? And if we do, what will happen when one too many clambers in? Second, do we paddle among those crying out for help until we find 10 strong enough to row our boat? And if we do, what happens to all of those crying out for help? And finally, number 3, what do we do with all of those other people in the boat who insist on pulling more people out of the water and into our boat, contrary to our demands? So do we allow them to keep pulling people into the boat until we get one too many? And what happens if we do pull one too many into the boat? Those are the questions we're looking at. You know, folks, we citizens of the United States have been relying on the labor of illegal immigrants to grow our food, cook our food, and wash our dishes. Because of we have been relying on this so long and for so to such a great extent, we have lost our ability to control all the immigrants who now do clamber into freely into our country in spite of laws to the contrary. The limits suggested by Garrett Hardin's lifeboat ethics lead us to ask today, can we allow everyone into Lifeboat USA? Well, here to help us out today we have Matt O'Brien, who is the Director of Research for the Federation of American Immigration Reform. Matt, welcome to the Food Chain.
Thank you very much for having me.
So you've been in the immigration field for a long time, haven't you? You worked as your former chief of the National Security Division of the U.S. Citizenship and Immigration Service, Assistant Chief Counsel, U.S. Immigration and Customs in the New York District, Director of Research, Federation for American Immigration Reform. So been around the immigration business for a long time.
Yeah, for about 2 decades. And I also spent time as a private practice immigration attorney representing people who are trying to immigrate to the United States. I have experience from both sides of the issue.
Both sides of the issue is, and that's a good one. So, well, I guess there are two sides to this issue, and we kind of wonder about it. It seems like, you know, first of all, what is the Federation for American Immigration Reform? You're now the director of research of that. What is that?
The Federation for American Immigration Reform is a 501c3 nonprofit educational organization, and we are dedicated to educating the public on the immigration issue and what impact it has on national security policy, on economics, and on the lifestyle and culture of the United States.
Good. And we always like to ask who pays the way.
Sure. It's funded by member donations and donations from private individuals who are concerned about the issue.
Good. Well, you know, it seems to this observer, at least, as though the borders of the United States have been dissolved and any and all have been invited in to partake and have their fill of the USA. Am I wrong?
No, you're 100% correct. Fair believes that a country that can't control its borders very rapidly will cease to be a country. And we seem to be in a situation, especially if you look at the news coverage following the Trump executive orders, where people somehow seem to think that people outside of the U.S. with no connection whatsoever to the United States have a legal and constitutional right to come into the U.S. And that's dangerous. We have a right to control our borders. The function of a government is to secure the security, safety, and to a certain extent, the ability of its citizens to earn a living from an economic standpoint. And if the government's failing to do that, we're in big trouble.
Well, you know, what you say kind of rings true. I was watching, you know, one of the riots consequent to Trump's decision. And what I heard some of the rioters say is the demand to dissolve the borders. No more borders. No more borders. No more borders. Has there ever been a country in the history of the world that has not defended its borders?
There has never been a country with open borders, because if you think about it, a country is defined by its borders. The one country I can think of that failed to defend its borders and utterly fell apart was the Roman Empire. And essentially the fall of the Roman Empire had a lot to do with Rome's inability to defend its borders and Rome's belief that if it let in anyone that was a threat and brought them into the fold, eventually that would change their view and the threat would no longer exist. That didn't end so well for Rome.
Well, that's not good news. How do other countries manage their borders? Are there any other countries that are dissolving their own borders like we are?
Well, I think there are countries that have subscribed to the notion that this is a good idea. If you look at what's happening in the European Union, to a certain extent, did dissolve its borders and outsource the protection of the borders all around the European Union to the countries that are at the edge of that organization. And that has created a large amount of controversy over the refugees from Syria. However, the fact is that most countries are pretty seriously concerned about their borders needs. And a lot of countries, even the ones that the U.S. is allies with, are interested in using their borders as a manner of enforcing preferences, as well as preserving economic benefits for their citizens. So some of the countries that come to mind are Japan, South Korea, Mexico, Switzerland, who all have pretty serious immigration regulations. But meanwhile, a lot of these places are criticizing the United States and saying that it should change the way that it handles its borders, even while America remains the most welcoming country in the world.
Well, I guess two countries come to mind as kind of defining what you've just said. One is Japan, which is very serious about not letting anybody in, or at least to be a citizen or a resident.
Japan has very, very serious immigration regulations. It significantly limits the number of people who are able to live in Japan who are foreign nationals. Most of them are temporary visitors, what we would call non-immigrant visitors here in the United States. The majority of the people that are allowed to immigrate permanently are people who are married to Japanese citizens, and then even in that situation, it's very difficult for those people to obtain citizenship. And Japan has had a problem for a long time with both South Korean and Brazilian minorities that came to Japan to work in a variety of the industries there. And they have large groups of people who are actually born in Japan who are of these other ethnicities who are not permitted to become citizens of Japan.
And Mexico, it seems to me like Mexico is governed by people of Spanish descent who govern people of ethnic minorities. And it seems like what Mexico is doing is foisting off their troubled populations to the United States. Am I wrong?
No, you're 100% correct, and Mexico is rather devious in the way that it does this. Mexico, in order to avoid confrontation with its neighbors to the south, has had a history of allowing people from places like Guatemala, El Salvador, places throughout Central and South America to transit Mexico, essentially allowing them to get to the U.S. border and then try and illegally cross the border. That's a problem from the standpoint of international law, because Mexico has a responsibility to maintain its own borders and the integrity of its own system for regulating immigration. But what it does is it allows Mexico to appear beneficent in the eyes of its neighbors while dumping all of the problem children that it doesn't wish to accept on the United States. And really, that speaks volumes about Mexico's approach. It's very hypocritical. And Mexico is not accepting people from neighbor countries which have a culture and a religious background and a moral background that's similar to that in Mexico, where they could assimilate very easily and be greatly helped by the Mexican government and the Mexican economy.
Okay, folks, that's what's on the table today, lifeboat ethics. Can we allow everybody into Lifeboat USA? And if we do, what will happen to us when we allow one too many? Right back.
Wow, MetroFarm.com says we can earn a 5-, 6-, or 7-figure income by farming a small parcel of land in or near the city.
And we don't even have to own the land, we can lease it year to year.
MetroFarm.com says we can grow fruit on prairie bench lands, houseplants in coastal valleys, vegetables in city greenbelts, and ornamentals in neighborhoods of fancy homes.
We can even grow flowers on our wooded hillside.
Get all the information you need to grow for profit at MetroFarm.com, including the complete guide to earning 5-, 6-, and 7-figure incomes by farming small parcels of land. Meet the farmers who earn the money. Find experts at MetroFarm.com who will examine your property and assess which crops to grow. Meet consultants who will help steer your project to profitability. And get the latest news about the business of growing high-value specialty crops for the city at MetroFarm.com.
We've always dreamed about farming a small parcel of land. At MetroFarm.com, we can get all the help we need to stop dreaming and start growing.
Well, folks, our ship has sunk. Fortunately, we managed to climb into the lifeboat. There's 50 of us in the lifeboat, room for 10 more. But there are hundreds treading water, crying for help for us to pull them into the sanctuary of our lifeboat. What are we going to do? Are we going to pull them all in? If we do, what happens when we pull one too many in? What do you think? 831-479-1080. This is the Food Chain Radio Program. Today we have Matt O'Brien, Director of Research, Federation for American Immigration Reform. Matt, our intern producer, Olivia, has a rebuttal to your comment about Mexico. So let's ask her to make that rebuttal here. Go ahead, Olivia.
Sure.
Yeah, well, I wouldn't say it's so much of a rebuttal as it is a question. Are we looking at this too narrowly? We're talking a lot about U.S. borders, but we should also be paying attention to why people are coming to our country to begin with, not just for opportunity, but are they escaping something? Is that something more to focus on? Because I've actually volunteered at an immigration sanctuary, and I've literally been face-to-face with these cases, and I think it's more of a matter of beyond the U.S.
Matt?
Well, I think that's a good point, but I think it doesn't take into account the whole situation. The United States has a responsibility to take care of its own citizens, and certainly as a citizen of the world, the U.S. as a country that participates in the community of nations, does have an obligation to assist people who are in need. But I think the United States does its fair share of that. And so, sure, some of these people are trying to escape things. They're very legitimately frightening and dangerous. But at a certain point, there's an obligation, if you have problems in your own country, to stay there and try and confront those problems and fix them. I mean, we wouldn't have the United States if George Washington and John Hancock and James Madison and all of those folks said, hey, listen, this is a rough situation. I'm going to France or I'm going to Germany. So there's that issue. But then on top of that, there's the question of how can the U.S. most effectively help to resolve these situations? The U.S. can't take everyone from these countries. It can't.
Well, wait a minute. Why not? Why can't we take in 100 billion people, or how many billions people there are? Why can't we bring them all into our lifeboat?
Well, we have a lot of room. That's true, but we don't have enough room for that many people. And there's also a finite limit to the amount of resources that are available in terms of water, arable land, avoiding pollution so that we can continue to use the water and the arable land. And so eventually you reach a tipping point for any country as to how many people that it can actually support based on what kind of geographical, agricultural, and financial resources that it has available. And there hasn't been a country in history that has simply said, well, we'll subsume another country and accept everyone from that place, and that will solve the problem. It's never happened because, frankly, it can't. It's just impossible.
Have you, at folks at the Federation, ever considered Garrett Hardin's lifeboat ethics allegory as a way of looking at this situation? A lifeboat. Well, we're Lifeboat USA, and there are hundreds of millions of people out there who want to clamber into the lifeboat because, you know, the waters in which they tread are frightening. And so why not let them in?
Well, I guess the question is, if it's really an issue of everyone else's ship sinking, would the U.S. be more effective at helping them build better ships and helping them sail their own path than simply pulling them into the United States? Because at a certain point, if you have too many people in your lifeboat, it starts to swamp and sink, and it becomes part of the problem rather than the solution.
There seems to be two streams of logic behind allowing for unrestricted immigration that we have going on right now. One of them is an altruistic notion that we need to help people. We need to help everybody who needs to be helped. I saw a letter from a Lutheran bishop who was chewing out President Trump for stopping, you know, putting a temporary hold on immigration and saying, you know, it's our duty to help everybody that needs to be helped. And there seems to be one other motive, and that seems to be political in nature, wherein, you know, you invite everybody in and they become dependent upon you, and therefore they will vote for you. Are there any other reasons for allowing for unrestricted immigration?
No, I mean, I think you hit the nail on the head. Politically speaking, there is a belief that everyone will come in, become dependent upon you, and vote for you ad infinitum, thereby ensuring one party rule in the United States, which is not how our system works. You know, but as the wider ethical issue, I think you have to take into account that if you take on too great a burden, then you're not actually able to assist anyone else. So you have to look at how can you most effectively utilize your own resources to assist other people. And let's face it, we in the United States here have a wonderful life. We have that because as a nation, we've built it and we've hewn to certain political and moral principles that have allowed us to build that life. And I think that does impose an obligation on us to assist other people in other countries. But the question is, does that make the United States responsible for the fate and the destiny of every nation in the world? And I think it certainly doesn't. And if the United States overloads itself with people to the point where it can no longer function and be the country that it has always been, it's not going to be able to assist anyone. So we have to take a realistic look at how can we help to solve these problems, and in so doing, where do we actually need to relocate people here in order to protect them, and when can we actually assist them where they are, where their culture, their basis, their life, and the things that they're familiar with exist, because it's much easier for people to correct their own situations when they are around all the things and people that they're familiar with than it is for them to come to the United States and assimilate. And if you accept too many people too fast, then they don't assimilate, and you create the very same problem in their own countries here in the U.S.
Now, quick question before we go to the phones. I've heard that there was no illegal immigration or documented immigration, as whatever the case may be, into the United States somewhere between like the 1930s and the 1960s. And I've heard that the reason for that was that the United States accepted so many immigrants at one time, it needed to allow them to assimilate. It seems to me like the immigrants that we're hosting now are not assimilating, but rather gathering in enclaves and holding on to who they were before they came here. Makes sense? Or am I...
No, I think that's accurate. The immigration was somewhat less. We never actually ever shut off immigration. We accepted a large number of people after World War II. We accepted refugees after Korea. We did the same thing after Vietnam. I think the difference now is we're accepting people in such large numbers that it's very possible for them to live in enclaves where they continue to live as if they were in their own countries rather than in the United States. And through no fault of their own, what it does is it puts them in a position where there is no incentive to actually begin to integrate into U.S. society and become a part of the wider U.S. population. And so what you see happen is those people tend to suffer economically because of their inability to communicate in English. Their children, on the other hand, tend to assimilate at a much higher level. So what we want to do is we want to simply manage the process so that we are not excluding the very people that we invited here to the United States from participation in the American dream. If we're going to have an immigration policy, we should want the people that we allow to come here to be successful and give them every opportunity to do so.
Oh, that takes us to the second question in the ethics. Is that should we row among those who are treading water and look for those who are strong enough to help row our boat? Well, let's go to the phones really quickly and pick up Dick, who has a question. Dick, welcome to the Food Chain.
Yeah, hey, nice to hear Mr. O'Brien, and hi, Mike. Yeah, the 1800s Wild West expansion's over. Our immigration quotas are way too high, both for H-1Bs and for illegals. And my question is, I know we're beating on the left here, and I'm 100% confident that that Trump is going to fix this. But I know why the left really has no idea.
Here, put your question out really quickly, and we'll pick you up on the other side.
The question is why is the left so anxious to have open borders, and why are they ignoring the economic impact of it all?
Okay, good. Hold that. We pick you up right when we get back. Folks, this is the Food Chain. Michael Olson, Lifeboat Ethics with Matt O'Brien and you, 831-479-1080. Welcome back, folks. You know, we live in a very beautiful, attractive nation in the world. We're very fortunate here. The good Lord gave us a lot to work with, and we've done a pretty good job of working with it. Not so fortunate other places in the world. Some say it's almost like we're USA's a lifeboat for the world, and so here we are. Our ship has sunk. We're in Lifeboat USA. How many people should we allow into our lifeboat? If we allow too many, what will happen to the lifeboat? Will sink, right? And so what else do we do? Do we row around and find others strong enough to help us row? What do we do with the people in the lifeboat who keep pulling everybody in and filling up the lifeboat to over capacity? What do we do with those people? Those are questions that, you know, you could take and look at our culture and see that we are indeed Lifeboat USA. Do we let everybody in? Well, let's pursue our questioning. We're holding for Mike or Dick. Dick, you had a great question. Go ahead and rephrase it really quickly for Matt.
Yeah, it is suicidal. The left is suicidal about this issue, and I want to be real clear that why they're doing it, and I want to know why they're not facing up to the
economic. Okay, let's say, first, why do you think they're doing it?
I think they're doing it for voters and staying in power. That's simple as that. And now the young are all taught that that America is the cause for the world problems, and we, like you said, are ethically, you know, they're being taught this stuff, that we're ethically responsible.
Our university intern, Olivia Duncan, is nodding in assent at what you're saying. Olivia, is that true?
Only with the last part that you're saying about the U.S. involvement in other countries and regions' politics, for sure.
So it's all our fault that the world is that the world's ship has sunk and people are in the water. It's our fault. Therefore, we should bring them all into our boat.
I would say we have a large part to play in it, but...
Okay.
And that's just revisionist history. That's all that is. We've had, there's been conflicts all over the world. I don't want to get into that, but I'd like to hear from Mr. O'Brien, why is the left ignoring the economics of just open borders, and do they think that we can print money forever and the dollar will just save everybody in the world?
Okay, thank you for your call, Dick. Really appreciate it. Matt?
Sure. Well, if I can start with Dick's last point, he's right on the money, pun intended. Margaret Thatcher once said the problem with socialism is that eventually you run out of other people's money. And one of the fundamental economic principles in the United States has always been that the state should be involved minimally in the economy and that people should be entitled to drive their own economic destiny. And so what you have with this problem overall is I think that most younger people have been taught that the United States is responsible for all the ills in the world, and they haven't been given a lesson on how much good the United States has been responsible for bringing to the world. And so there is a belief that because the U.S. is wealthy and because the U.S. is doing well, that it then has a responsibility to fix everyone else's problems and to pay for everyone else's problems, when really it's a question of worldview. And if you look at it as the U.S. is doing things correctly and we have a pool of talent, then yes, we can assist the rest of the world in fixing the problems, but we should not be directly responsible for fixing the difficulties that other people in other nations have wrought for themselves.
Mary, go ahead. You're on the Food Chain Radio program with Matt O'Brien of The Affair. Go ahead.
Yes, hi, and thank you for the show. I would like to know if you know the statistics of citizens already of the U.S. who are living in poverty, because I understand from many of the readings that I have done that there's some 40 to 50 million people on food stamps, and those people are living in poverty already within the U.S. And so when do we make a decision about the poverty level that we're willing to accept with our own population and then make a decision about whether or not we can afford to bring other people in?
Well, Mary,
now, and I just have one more piece of this. I was looking at a city, Dearborn, and it's a population of Muslims. They've been brought in. They're given health care, living accommodations. They're given education. In many cases, they're given cars and so on and so forth. And it turns out a lot of these people have a lot of money. In fact, they carry their Prada purses in with their medical cards at taxpayers' expense to doctors, drive around in nicer cars than I have. And I'm just wondering, at what point do we really make an effort to take care of those people who are in the boat?
Mm-hmm. And
we bring others. And I would suggest that we're probably breaking the backs of middle class America with taxation and pushing them towards the poverty level with our lifeboat ethics. And I think it's upside down.
Thank you, Mary. It's kind of as if we don't jump in the water with everybody else. Matt, how would you respond to Mary?
Well, to answer Mary's first question, I think the time is now. And I think that the American electorate spoke very clearly in the last election that they're not willing to tolerate any more poverty. They want Americans to be the first consideration of the United States government. And they want the government to be preoccupied with helping to maximize the opportunities for Americans to be successful in America. Regarding the situation in Dearborn, Michigan, this has been a problem in our desire to be beneficent to the people that we invite here. We very frequently allow them benefits that we would not allow to Americans who have been paying into the system for years. There's problems with fraud. There's problems with the fact that the legislation is too generous. And FAIR believes that the primary purpose of immigration should be to benefit the American taxpayer, that we should be making our immigration decisions in a small minority of cases based on who requires assistance, because of imminent danger in the world. But apart from that, that it should be a system which is designed to benefit Americans and to benefit the American public and generate well-being for Americans, which in turn, by definition, will generate well-being for the people who we invite here.
So what you're saying, to use the allegory of the Lifeboat USA, is that we should paddle around in the waters and find people who have strong arms who could help us row the boat.
Well, I think we need to strike a balance between those with strong arms who can help us row the boat and those who are completely exhausted and can no longer keep their head above water. But once we bring those people into the boat who can no longer keep their heads above water, it's not unreasonable of us to expect that after a reasonable period of rest and relaxation, they should be recuperated and be willing to participate in rowing the boat or navigating the boat or plugging the holes in the boat as best they can.
Good. Mark, welcome to the food chain.
Oh. Yeah, good morning, gentlemen.
Just throw out your question really quickly. We'll take a break and bring you back up.
Okay, gentlemen, I'm an employer and a father, and I employ millennials and Generation Xers and my children in that category. These young people feel secure in their employment. They feel secure in their finances. The one thing they're running into a roadblock here in California is housing. And it's a big issue now, and it's only going to get worse, especially here in Santa Cruz County. And this concept of open borders, they're being left out in the outlying areas. In that, just look at Sacramento last year, took 3,000 Syrian refugees, 3,000.
Okay, you're going to have to hold that, and we're going to pick you up when we get back. This is the Food Chain Radio Program. Michael Olson with Matt O'Brien, and you do stay tuned. Welcome back. This is the Food Chain Radio Program. Michael Olson Matt O'Brien is the Director of Research, Federation for American Immigration Reform. We're talking about lifeboat ethics. Folks, our ship has sunk, but we are in the lifeboat. What do we do? There are 50 of us in the lifeboat, room for 10 more, hundreds in the water, treading water, yelling, screaming, begging for help. Do we let them all in our lifeboat? And if we do, what happens if we let one too many? Do we paddle around amongst them and find 10 who are strong enough to help us row the boat? What do we do with the people in the boat who keep pulling everybody else in, despite our pleas not to? That's the ethical questions involved in lifeboat ethics, and that's what we're working with today. We have Mark has tuned in. Not enough housing, right, Mark?
Well, yeah, it was interesting to hear your producer and intern speak, because I assume they're either, millennial or Gen X, and sort of have the philosophy of the open border. But I think they should be a little more pragmatic in their outlook, in that if they want to remain in the Monterey Bay area, there is no housing. If you want to commute to work, Highway 1 is a joke. But, it's interesting because I hear the young people speak, and employment's fine, finances are fine, life is fine except for one basic need, and they have nowhere to live. And if we continue with the open border, these people will want to live somewhere, and they will be competing for housing with our children.
Okay, that Olivia's chomping on the bit. Olivia, go ahead.
Mark, you are right. I am a millennial, and I am an immigrant, actually. We're talking about housing and all these issues I feel like that already exist, housing, poverty. Is immigration really going to influence it that much, of course, but also shouldn't we be focusing on those issues independently of immigration? Isn't it part of a larger system, all these interconnected bits, and immigration is just the hot topic of the day?
Oh, well, that's interesting. Well, Mark and Matt.
Well, the solution being proposed in our county is high-density housing. On Soquel Avenue, they're going to be building these five-story megastructures. And I don't think it fits the environment that we envision for our community.
Yes, there
is an answer, but is it the answer we want?
Okay, thank you very much. Matt, how would you answer Olivia's objection?
Well, I think that Olivia's not taking into account what the real nature of the problem is. You're talking about California, and particularly in the coastal region, which is already one of the most densely populated areas.
Well, actually, we're talking everywhere.
Well, definitely. But I think the issue is, if you're taking, and you think about immigration, generally speaking, where are people going to go? They're going to go where jobs are, and jobs are located where people are. So that means you're taking areas that are already densely populated with a local population, and you're increasing the number of people who are there. Now, if you're talking about people moving in response to, from within the United States to an environmental or an economic crisis, those are all things that, various communities and municipalities would begin to take some kind of action to correct. But because of the political correctness, when it involves immigrant groups, there's no action taken to correct that. And of course, the action that should be taken to correct that situation when you are finding your population too swelled by immigration in order to be able to accommodate it is to simply enforce your borders and not let the people come in who are attempting to enter illegally. So is this a problem that comes up in other contexts? Sure, but it's certainly a problem that's being made worse at the present time by the unprecedentedly large numbers of people who are immigrating to the United States, both legally and without authorization.
Terry on the line, fire away.
Yes, Michael. I'm appalled at how both the left wing and sometimes the right wing fail to look at the big picture and to look at how we got here into these trends.
What's the big picture?
Reality recognition was made by the Dalai Lama on this point. When asked about, shouldn't we also show great compassion for the impoverished, overpopulated third world? The Dalai Lama's wisdom was, speaking of Mr. Compassion, he said, those who have too many children, meaning children they cannot themselves feed and support. Why, he said to the third world, do you have children you yourselves cannot feed, house, clothe, and provide long-standing future economic opportunities to? Having children the world cannot absorb is an act of not compassion, but of inflicting harm and suffering on others in the future.
Ooh. Matt?
Well, I think that there certainly is an element of responsibility in this, and one of the reasons that the United States lives in the situation it lives in is because people in the United States have a tendency culturally, and I think logically, to try and live within their means, plan families that are in sizes that they can actually support, and, generally speaking, to take responsibility in their immediate neighborhoods for trying to help care for their neighbors. Americans are the kindest people in the entire world when somebody experiences a difficulty in showing Christian charity to their neighbors. But I think that the problem with this whole debate is the United States goes above and beyond every other country in the world in terms of showing Christian charity. And just as an example, if we look at the Trump executive order, so this has been classified as a Muslim ban. Well, the fact is it covers seven nations, which constitute less than 10% of the Muslim world. The remainder of the Muslim world, out of the 51 Muslim nations in the world, 44 of them aren't affected. And since the September 11th attacks, when one might have expected all immigration from the Muslim world to be shut down, the United States has admitted about 2 million Muslims, which includes lawful permanent residents, asylees, and refugees. And that doesn't even include the numbers of temporary visitors who come here to work on H-1B or L-1 visas. So I think when you take a look at this, yes, there is an element of responsibility outside the United States, but as far as its ethical obligations, I think the United States has met and exceeded all of its ethical obligations, and it's perfectly reasonable for the United States to stop at this point and say, listen, if our generosity is making our security suspect, if we think that our generosity...
Right back. Do stay tuned. Well, I think we're back. Not sure, but I think so. Let's go quickly to the phones. We have a couple of minutes left. So much ground to cover. Mike, go ahead.
Hi, guys. The lifeboat is full. We've got 40 to 60 million Americans, mostly women, children, and people of color, living in poverty right now. Each illegal immigrant that comes in takes opportunity and resources away from those 40 to 60 million Americans who, again, are women, children, and people of color.
Well, Mike, let me ask you this. Should we only take people who have arms strong enough to row our boat? Don't you think that we should take the women and children who are in the water?
People are dying on the boat. The boat's full.
Okay. Thank you very much. Got that one. Let's try Chris. Chris, welcome to the food chain.
Thank you. I'm a farmer in Salinas and Watsonville, and I know firsthand that the labor situation, how important immigration labor is to
right.
the economy and the fresh cut industry. I'd like the opinion of your guests as to how they feel the immigration issues will affect our food industry.
Wow, there you go. So we have Donald Trump is trying to get a hold of the immigration world of immigration, trying to put some kind of controls on it. And we have agriculture that has relied hugely on immigration and illegal immigration, or as undocumented immigration, as Olivia would say. So what's going to happen to our industry of food, of agriculture? Who's going to grow our food? Who's going to cook our food? Who's going to wash our dishes, Matt?
Well, I think our food was grown, our food was cooked, and our dishes were washed long before there was any substantial immigration to the United States. FAIR has actually published a study called Illegal Immigration and Agribusiness, the Effect on the Agriculture Industry of Converting to a Legal Workforce. And our conclusions were that in most sectors of the agricultural industry, there was between a 5 to 10% difference that would be made. And when that actually accrued to the workers, in other words, you started hiring legal workers with authorization to work in the United States, the 5 to 6% increase that they experienced in their wages meant that they were paying that money back into the economy, and it tended to grow the economy significantly more than the 5 to 6%, 5 to 10% savings that agri-producers were experiencing by hiring illegal alien labor.
Well, then we have a minute or two left. Matt O'Brien, you're with FAIR, Federation for American Immigration Reform. What is your answer to the lifeboat ethics posed by Garrett Hardin, the late Garrett Hardin? What do we do? Do we keep letting everybody into our lifeboat until we sink? Do we row among those who are in the water and find the strongest to help us row the boat? What do we do about the people who are keep pulling people into the boat in spite of all of our pleas not to?
Well, I think it's a balance between security and safety as well as our ethical and moral obligations. And the United States has been doing a great job so far. There are just a number of people who don't like the concept of borders or immigration enforcement at all. So I think the United States needs to stay true to its principles. It needs to protect its own citizens first, because if it does not do that, the republic falls apart. It won't be there to help anyone else.
Just like ancient Rome, right? Well, Matt O'Brien, Federation of American Immigration Reform, thank you so much for joining us. And thank you all for tuning in out there. I want you to remember Michael Olson's third law of the food chain: cheap food isn't.
Thanks.
Been listening to the award-winning Food Chain Show with Michael Olson. If your friends missed the show today, tell them to log on to the radio page at www.metrofarm.com for a listen. Now go out and find some food with a farmer's face on it and live.